Good morning, and welcome to the Match Group First Quarter 2017 Earnings Conference Call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing the star key followed by zero. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To ask a question, you may press star, then one on your telephone keypad. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. Please note, this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Lance Barton, Senior Vice President, Investor Relations. Mr. Barton, please go ahead.
Thank you, operator, and good morning, everyone. I'm joined on the call by Match Group Chairman and CEO Greg Blatt and Chief Financial Officer Gary Swidler. Greg and Gary will be reviewing the investor presentation that has been posted to the IR section of our website, and then we'll open it up for questions. I'd also like to remind everyone that during this call, we may discuss our outlook and future performance. These forward-looking statements may be preceded by words such as we expect, we believe, we anticipate, or similar statements. These statements are subject to risks and uncertainties, and our actual results could differ materially from the views expressed here today. Some of these risks have been set forth in our earnings release and our periodic reports filed with the SEC. Now I will turn the call over to Greg.
Hey, everybody. Good morning. Glad you could join us for our Q1 earnings call. We had a great first quarter, and the year is looking very solid. I'll talk about subgrowth and product and marketing strategy. Then Gary will take you through the financials and our outlook. Then we'll take questions. Let's jump right to slide four. Overall PMC growth was very strong, driven by international PMC growth, which was really excellent. Tigger drives more of that growth rate because it's larger on a relative basis than in North America. Meetic's doing really well. POF and OKC, both are starting to contribute more internationally. And Pairs in Japan continues to prove to be one of our smarter acquisitions in a long, long time. As we said on the last call, the end of 16 and the start of 17 had sort of a weird funk to them in North America, sort of across the board in our businesses for no clear reason. We thought maybe the election, but we don't really know. Regardless, it finally picked up again at the beginning of March with that rebound continuing through today. This initial slowness combined with some marketing spend shifts to Q2 impacted North America PMC a bit, but nonetheless, we were generally on track. We had strong growth from Tinder and POF. Match and OKC were generally consistent with what we expected. And of course, the biggest impact on the quarter was from Affinity and its continued controlled runoff, costing us a large chunk of PMC on a year-over-year basis. Again, that loss of PMC is unprofitable PMC, so it doesn't really affect our underlying economics, but it does drive down the year-over-year subcomps and has an impact on year-over-year revenue. We expect that negative Affinity comp to persist for several quarters. Now let's dig into each of our individual businesses a bit. Slide five. Tinder obviously had great PMC growth in Q1. It started slow, just like a bunch of our other businesses, but then picked up again in March. We launched Superlike to non-subscribers and continued to drive up overall revenue through optimizing between PMC and a la carte. Again, most of the things that we do through PMC, we can also do through a la carte. In fact, many of them we do on a hybrid basis with the subscription. You get some part of the a la carte usage. So we're sort of constantly optimizing there and toggling, focused primarily on revenue growth, not necessarily PMC growth or a la carte growth in isolation, but optimizing the two. It's pretty amazing that we're now number two in App Store revenue for non-games globally, behind only Netflix. We're certainly always confident that we'd be able to build a great subscription business on the Tinder product, but it's obviously incredibly gratifying to see it come through the way it has. It's an incredible business with great monetization characteristics. We've also implemented the Facebook ad engine we talked about last quarter. We'll use it to fill excess inventory beyond our direct efforts. Testing was delayed somewhat by the tech debt-related feature freeze that we talked about last quarter, and we'll talk about a little bit more later. But it's starting now. We should have a good sense of where we're going to be on that front next quarter. Turning to slide six. On the Tinder product side, there continues to be a lot going on. Two very long-running projects, SMS authentication and Tinder Online, are both now in test. It's early, but the preliminary results are promising. It looks like we should see a user bump, especially internationally, but it's all still a little too early and noisy to quantify. Additionally, on the online business, we'll be launching online payments sometime in Q3. We'll certainly never get the same sort of mix of payments online as we have with our other businesses, but over time, we do expect to be able to move a portion of our users to pay us outside the App Store. That'll be a nice bump to margins, though it will play out over time, and again, hard to predict the exact level of impact at this point, but once we've launched it, we'll be working to optimize that part of the business. We also finished finally cleaning up our tech debt in both our Android and iOS app. This was a big multi-month project, occupied a lot of our tech resources. Thankfully, it's already paying nice dividends in terms of reduced crash rates and generally higher performance. Probably most importantly, it really should set a solid foundation for easier iteration on products going forward, easier code to write, fewer bugs, and just faster iteration. Finally, now that we're finished with our feature freeze, we've got a number of new projects in the pipeline. We're changing navigation, improving our recommendation engine, in part through the use of some very cool AI from our dedicated and top-notch data sciences team at Tinder. We're adding new revenue features and a host of other cool stuff I can't really talk about yet. But I said last time that Tinder will look and feel different to our users by the end of this year, and we're well on track to bring that around. A ton of energy is going into increasing Tinder's vibrancy, creating new features and experiences that enhance our relationship with our users, all key to driving continued growth. Slide 7. As we turn to our other business, I want to step back for a second. Going back to when we were taking Match Group public, our big challenge in these businesses was conversion. We were dealing with a huge shift from desktop to mobile, and our products couldn't keep up. We said we were confident we could fix it, but knew we had to prove it out. I'm glad to say that the outcome on that one is no longer really in doubt. After 7 consecutive quarters of conversion declines, which dramatically impacted this business, we've just completed our 5th straight quarter of conversion increases year over year. We've created mobile products that now work for our users, and they're responding accordingly. Having fixed that part of the product, we're now turning our attention to growing the top of the funnel. Here, we're again looking at product as the driver, though backed in many cases by marketing spend. As I mentioned last call, during our quest to develop mobile products that work well, our products lost their individuality. In this space, you need to be differentiated. You need to stand for something. Over a period of years, our products that had developed their unique identities over more than a decade gave a fair amount of that away. Now we're fully oriented around getting it back. Let's start with Match. As you can see here on slide 7, we said we were going to improve mobile web, and we have. We said that we'd rebuild conversion, and it's now at its highest point since 2014. The reality is that the biggest collection of online daters and potential online daters with a high propensity to pay are right in the Match brand's wheelhouse. These people want a relationship, they want a trusted brand, and they're willing to pay for filtering based on intent. And there's no other product out there better positioned to continue to capture and to further expand into this group. The sweet spot is Matches to hold and to expand. Our strategy for 17 is to release a cool, distinctive new feature each quarter of 17 and build an aggressive marketing campaign around each one. The first is Missed Connections, a location-based feature that is really driving engagement. We just launched a new TV campaign around it a couple weeks ago. Our first ever campaign really focused on a product feature, and the early returns are promising. Next quarter, there will be another feature backed by another campaign, then the next quarter after that, and then the next quarter after that. The roadmap is set. We think each individual feature and related campaign will be effective, but we also expect a cumulative effect from the aggressive product release schedule and heavy marketing focus on our product innovation. Match has never done anything like this before. Frankly, I've been doing this a long time, and I can't think of a single product owned by us or anyone else that will have released a series of significant consumer features in such rapid succession. And we're going to back each of those rollouts with the most significant marketing spend in the entire category. We really think by the end of the year, we're going to have made major changes in how people think about Match and our ability to grow our user base in that most attractive of all user segments. Slide 8. Turning to OkCupid, we've dug into who our core users are and then tried to bring features that appeal to those users to the forefront. OkCupid has always had a uniquely educated and engaged audience. But OkCupid, as it transitioned to mobile, lost its avenues for self-expression and lost the centrality of its Q&A engine, which has always been the heart of that engagement. Now we're getting its mojo back. It really is a fundamental redesign. More ways to present and express yourself on a substantive level, fun new ways to deploy the Q&A engine throughout the product, and we're seeing significant conversion increases year over year on the new product. Because OkCupid isn't backed by meaningful marketing spend, it may take a little longer for the improvements experienced by our current users to translate into increases in new users, but we believe it's only a matter of time. This will be a very unique product once we're done rolling our changes through, and we think very true to its heritage and its core appeal. We expect this to really resonate with a meaningful audience and drive renewed growth. Slide 9. Each of our products works differently. They all do the same things, but they do them in different ways. And the cool thing about POP is that the average user has twice the number of conversations that users of our other products do. It's just naturally more of a communication app. The barriers are fewer, and the audience is more open to engagement. This drives uniquely social experience on POP. But no one really knows that. Now we're bringing it all to the forefront of its branding and its product, designing features that drive that highly conversational element and remind users that that's what makes POP special. We're very early, but conversations are already up 14% year over year through these changes. And again, we're really just getting started. As with OkCupid, we think this kind of distinctiveness drives satisfaction, which drives increased word of mouth. But we've also been spending some marketing dollars behind POP, and it's been quite successful in Q1. We see the opportunity to ramp POP marketing throughout the year, and that can give us a whole new avenue for growth. Slide 10. Meetkit's approach right now is a little more tactical. For example, it's recently developed a new AI-driven chatbot to help accelerate traffic to registration conversion. This was just featured by Facebook at the recent F8 Developer Conference as being the standout chatbot application. It's really cool. It's a small test deployment right now, but I think foreshadowing of the kinds of really special things we can do as we invest deeper and deeper into new technologies. Additionally, and probably more immediate impact, Meetkit will be launching a whole new product in Q2, backed by marketing investment that we think will really get traction in Europe. Can't get into the details now, but this is more than a little app that we throw out there and see what happens. It really follows the Match Group concept of identifying targeted audiences, delivering products to meet them, and through that, bringing down our acquisition costs. We think there's an opportunity to drive additional subs with new channels for profitable marketing spend, and we're really looking forward to the launch. It's a real part of our sort of increase in marketing spend throughout the year. In all my many years here, we've never had such a robust landscape of product development, innovation, and differentiating laid out before us across the board. Over the next 12 months, we expect to be going deep on location-based technology, deep on video, deep on game dynamics, deep on artificial intelligence. Ranging across our products, each one making different bets to leverage common successes while reestablishing their unique individuality. At the end of the day, we're trying to deliver cool products to our users to help them make meaningful connections in their lives in fun and engaging ways, and the pipeline has never been as packed as it is right now. All these new features roll out over the coming months, the marketing starts to get behind it, and I'm confident we're going to see our top of the funnel for these brands start to grow just like conversion did a year ago. Gary?
Thanks, Greg. Now let's turn to the financial review and outlook for our business. One note, everything I discussed excludes the Princeton Review because that sale closed at the end of March, and we are now including it in discontinued operations for all periods. On slide 12, you can see that we experienced strong revenue, operating income, and EBITDA growth in Q1 2017. As Greg mentioned, the year actually started a little weaker than is typical, which caused us to be a little conservative in our outlook for the quarter, but March and April have shown better trends compared to January and February. For Q1, total revenue was $299 million, up 15%, driven by 16% PMC growth and steady ARPU. FX impact cost us $3.5 million in the quarter, or 1 point of growth. Revenue benefited from increased year-over-year marketing spend in Q4 2016 that manifested itself in higher revenue in Q1 2017. Typically, year-over-year changes in marketing spend have the largest impact on subsequent quarter year-over-year revenue comparisons. International direct revenue grew 30%, driven by 33% PMC growth. International benefits from our fast-growing Tinder business representing a greater portion of revenue. North American direct revenue grew 8% year over year, with Tinder and POF driving strong growth, but the intentional right-sizing of the Affinity brands was a significant headwind. We are optimizing the Affinity brands for long-term profitability. As we cut unprofitable marketing spend, we reduce subscribers and revenue, but don't really affect profit. We should be in a position to start growing profitably again at Affinity once we right-size the business. We're down just slightly on ad revenue in the quarter, as we continue to work to offset the reduction in impressions caused by the shift to mobile at our formerly desktop brands with higher ad rates. Note that our results do not yet show the benefit of Tinder's agreement with Facebook's audience network, which began testing in April. We had 72% operating income and 28% adjusted EBITDA growth in Q1. The quarter benefited from some cost controls, but also a decline in year-over-year marketing, driven primarily by significant decreases at Affinity, as well as some pushing of marketing spend from Q1 into Q2. Operating costs and expenses were 80% of revenue compared to 87% in Q1 2016. Operating income also benefited year-over-year from a $6.3 million decrease in amortization of intangibles related to the Plenty of Fish acquisition and a $1.9 million reduction in expense related to contingent consideration in connection with the previous acquisition. Slide 13 shows our ARPU, which has continued to be very steady. Total ARPU moved 0.2 cents year-over-year, but when rounded, it looks like a 1 cent change. The six largest businesses in our portfolio, Tinder, Match, OkCupid, Meetic, Pop, and Match Affinity, all showed flat or higher ARPU year-over-year in Q1 on a constant currency basis. North American ARPU is up 1 cent for the quarter, reflecting better monetization at most of our brands, partially offset by the mix shift to lower-priced brands. International ARPU was down 2% due to FX impacts. The FX impact in the quarter was 1.7 cents. International ARPU for the quarter was up 0.7 cents on a constant currency basis. Overall ARPU increased approximately 1% or 0.5 cents on a constant currency basis. Tinder's ARPU in Q1 continued to benefit from strong a la carte revenue from subscribers, which continued to more than offset the shift to lower ARPU international markets. Overall ARPU will continue to be slightly impacted by our gradual portfolio mix to our lower ARPU brands and the faster PMC growth we're seeing in international markets. Turning to the next slide, 14, we had $84 million of free cash flow in Q1, and we continue to grow cash balances. We recognized meaningful proceeds from the sale of the Princeton Review, just under $100 million, and so we now have $436 million of cash on hand, 260 of it held domestically. As you can see from the right side of this slide, we've been delevering quickly. We're now at 1.8 times net leverage and 2.8 times gross leverage, below our 3 times target. For some time, we've been saying that we'll use our cash to delever or for opportunistic M&A. That remains the case, but today we're also announcing that our board has authorized us to repurchase up to 6 million shares of our stock. We think this is a great additional capital management tool for us to have. We're very mindful that our public float is quite constrained, and we still expect float to increase over the course of 2017. But our stock has tended to fluctuate fairly meaningfully, and the buyback authorization enables us to take action if the circumstances warrant. This is not a buyback authorization where we plan to go into the market aggressively. It's possible we don't use it at all. But we do think, given our cash flow characteristics, that it's a good arrow to have in our quiver and enables us to act opportunistically to drive longer-term shareholder value. The buyback is similarly sized to the proceeds from the Princeton Review sale, so you can think of it as potentially returning those proceeds to our shareholders, though again, it's unclear how much of this we'll end up using. Given our strong free cash flow generation and our strong balance sheet, we're confident in our ability to consummate a buyback, continue to delever, and execute compelling M&A transactions should they present themselves. Turning to the next slide, 15, this lays out our financial outlook. At this time, we're not changing our full year 2017 outlook. We're on track to be within the ranges we presented, and it's only Q1, so we're not going to tinker at this point. We've always said that marketing spend can vary meaningfully quarter to quarter, which can impact any individual quarter, but evens out over the course of an entire year, and that's the case here. Altogether, our first half of the year will be very close to what we expected coming into the year. While marketing spend was down significantly at our non-Tinder businesses in Q1, we expect it to ramp on a year-over-year basis during the balance of 2017. We expect marketing spend to be up meaningfully year-over-year by Q4 17. On our last call, I noted that we expect revenue momentum to build throughout the year as Tinder's product momentum accelerates from a purposely slower first half, which has been focused to a large extent on tech cleanup. And we see the expected improvements in our non-affinity businesses, driven by revitalized product and increased marketing spend, as Greg spoke about. That remains the case. Additionally, ad revenue should ramp as the year progresses. Tinder's increase in average PMC in Q1 was impacted by the somewhat slow start to the year that Greg mentioned in his remarks, but this has picked up nicely beginning in March. We continue to expect Tinder's Q2 increase in average PMC to be moderately lower than Q1 given normal seasonality, with it accelerating again in the back half of the year as we roll out some significant new monetization initiatives. As we have said previously, we are focused on overall revenue growth at Tinder, not specifically subscription revenue, and are toggling between subscriber growth and a la carte revenue. A la carte revenue is increasingly contributing to Tinder's performance. Our Q2 revenue range reflects the impact of the decline in Q1 marketing spend. The ramp in marketing spend at Tinder and non-affinity brands in Q2 will impact our Q2 EBITDA. All in, we had a strong Q1 financially, we're executing on our 2017 priorities, and we're reiterating the full-year outlook we provided on our last call. With that, let's open the line to questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. And at this time, we will pause for a moment to assemble our roster. Our first question today will come from Brian Fitzgerald of Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Thanks, guys. Artificial intelligence seems like an interesting way to innovate some of your products. We saw a chatbot launch on Meetic platform at F8. Can you talk maybe about avenues in which you could utilize AI in the future and how you see it playing out for your other different brands?
Yeah, sure. It's going to be very big. Tinder alone, we've built an unbelievable dedicated data science team run by Professor Liu, who came over from McGill. All they do is work on AI. In its most simple form, right, it's going to drive amazing enhancements to recommendation engines. I mean, the technology they're developing, within a few swipes, they can start to tell exactly what you want, who you're interested in, et cetera. And it's, the early prototypes there are very exciting. It then goes to be able to select where you should go on a date, make proposals about sort of common interests and common suggestions, and it's really exciting. There are also various things we're playing with in terms of augmented reality and communicating through augmented reality through AI that sort of allows with facial gestures and other forms of nonverbal communication to pick up signals and send visuals back and forth. It's really an amazing, it's amazing what we're starting to be able to do. Chatbot at Meetic is another example of it. Everywhere AI is just sort of starting to scratch the surface, but we're making a big investment in it. It's not quite rolled out in our recommendation engine yet, but will be soon. And we really expect to just build from there. So we think it's one of several exciting technology sort of vectors that are starting to sort of really transform the category: location, video, AI. We think these are all going to be very big, and we are making investments across the board.
Great. Thanks, Greg.
Our next question will come from Dan Salmon of BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Greg, as I sit here and look at, I guess it's slide 13 with the RPU trends here, I think back, and it was always part of our thesis at least, that, this figure trends down over time. Is that still the case? I mean, does it appear that, maybe over the long term, especially Tinder is performing above your expectations? I mean, you said in your prepared remarks you really expected it to be a platform that monetizes well. But I'm just curious, more than just what the incremental, product developments are doing on the smaller things, is there a big picture change that's happening here And then secondly, just specifically on Tinder Social, perhaps just a little bit of an update on what you're seeing for engagement there. And you mentioned, you know, Plenty of Fish sees a higher rate of conversations than other apps. Is that, you know, an opportunity for more social opportunities there? Thanks.
Thank you, Dan. On the ARPU, I think I do expect it over time to decline, although I think modestly. You know, what has happened over the last year and a half is we've really been able to sustain Tinder ARPU through the growth in a la carte revenue to subscribers. That will continue to some extent, but I do think the exceptional growth we're seeing in rest of world PMC at Tinder will start to overwhelm that. Pricing is different between North America, Western Europe, and rest of world. And while PMC growth is strong everywhere, you know, shockingly, the rest of the world is bigger than North America and Western Europe, and we're seeing proportionality there. So I think that it hasn't declined as fast as we expected, certainly, and we've adjusted our own views of the rate of mix shift and our ability to offset it through these other means. But I do think on the long term, it will decline modestly. The POF question was...
Higher engagement and more social features.
On Tinder Social, I think... we launched Tinder Social in the form that we did. I think it's not, it has not been hugely impactful. I think that we continue to run it, and I think we are pursuing a number of social features that don't run through Tinder Social per se. So we've tested something called Tinder Tonight. We're also working on a number of new features. The goal is still to engage people beyond one-to-one. Tinder Social itself was not hugely impactful. In terms of POF, I think it's the higher conversation rate is unique to POF. I think it is because it is more social in terms of people communicate more, I don't know that it necessarily leads to social dynamics the way we're pursuing in Tinder and implementing in Tinder. I think it's a different audience base, something of a different use case, and I think Tinder is the place where you will see the most social dynamics in terms of groups, events, all that sort of thing versus some of our other properties.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Our next question will come from Peter Stabler of Wells Fargo. Please go ahead.
Good morning, too, if I could. First of all, going back to the affinity, wonder if you could give us a little bit more color on the runoff. You put in the 120K. Can you give us a rough split, geo split of the 120K? And then can you help us at all size the runoff going forward and when we might start lapping that? And then secondly, on Match, you talked about the product-oriented marketing plan. Greg, it's kind of the first time you guys have gone down this path, and you said it's going to lead to higher marketing spend behind Match. Just want to make sure that all of that increase in marketing spend is already fully contemplated in your guidance. Thanks so much.
Yeah, I'll take the second one first. The answer is yes. You know, we've said that our marketing spend is somewhat variable through the course of the year. This year, we sort of put a cap on it. We certainly don't think margins will come down as a result of the marketing spend, but it shifts around between different businesses. We certainly have always contemplated increasing the Match marketing spend throughout the year. As Gary said, within our numbers, we're down in Q1 year-over-year in marketing spend. We expect to be up meaningfully by Q4 year-over-year. So the Match marketing spend, as well as the MeetKick spend that we talked about in terms of a new product, all of that is built into our guidance.
So, Peter, the runoff of affinity and the runoff of the strategic brands are two slightly different things. And I just want to make sure everybody's clear on this. We have some non-strategic brands that were portfolio that we acquired that we are intentionally running down.
Portfolio that we acquired cheap.
Right.
Meaning these were, you know, sub-million-dollar acquisitions that we'd pick up and see, experiment with, et cetera, but had meaningful PMC.
Yeah. So those have been running down for several quarters. but they remain, as they continue to run down, a headwind on North American PMC numbers. And it is a relatively meaningful piece, but when you look at the total of 120,000 PMC, the vast bulk of that is caused by affinity, which is this step function rundown that we're intentionally doing as we focus on higher ROI targets for our affinity marketing spend. And that impact is going to, it's prevalent in this quarter, it's going to last for another two or three quarters as that business gets right-sized, and then that impact will start to lessen. So that is something that we're going to see in our performance and in our metrics for the next couple of quarters. And then that will be less of a factor. So I just want to make sure everyone's clear on what the impact is on our PMC numbers as you feel both of those impacts, one that's going to continue to run down and one that is a function for the next two or three quarters, and then we'll start to improve.
Apologies, Gary, but so the 120 is predominantly North American?
It's all of this is in North America.
Okay.
Both the non-strategic brands and the affinity, all of that is in North America, and it's got the two components, the non-strategic brands as well as the affinity. The affinity causes the predominant piece of the 120 of rundown.
Thank you.
Okay.
Our next question will come from Jason Helfstein of Oppenheimer. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Two questions. So one, can you comment or give color on MAU to PMC conversion? Just any color would be helpful. And then second, the magnitude of the Tinder a la carte and advertising when we think about getting to fourth quarter of this year or early next year, maybe help us understand as you're thinking about it how big that could be relative. Thank you.
The MAU to PMC conversion, it continues to go up. As I said, we've just had five consecutive quarters in all our formerly, you know, all our more established brands. That conversion going up is obviously positive. On Tinder, which is sort of excluded from that group, again, conversion continues to be strong. As Gary said, we're going to launch some new, you know, a significant monetization feature in Q3. We haven't really launched anything this significant in a while. That will continue to drive up conversion. So conversion overall across the portfolio is definitely going up. Gary, you want to take the other question?
Yeah, on the ad side, you know, we've talked about, first of all, we don't feel the impact of the Facebook Audience Network program yet in our results. But as that continues to be implemented, we will see increased ad revenue from that. And so the ad revenue is scaling in the back half of the year. And we've talked about it being a little bit faster than our revenue growth on the ad side. So this quarter is basically just down slightly on ads, but we should see improvement in the indirect revenue line as the year progresses.
And then on a la carte, again, I think you know, the majority of our a la carte revenue comes from subscribers, and that is built into our ARPU line. So I think that it's all obviously within the guidance, and I think as Gary said, ARPU is sort of holding steady at Tinder, much as a result of those increases in a la carte. We are starting to grow a la carte outside of PMC, which is not included in the ARPU number. Still relatively small, and I think it has impact and positive impact, but it's not sort of continent moving by any stretch at this point.
Okay, thank you. Next question, please.
Our next question will come from Eric Sheridan of UBS. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking the questions. Maybe one for Greg. Just want to understand all that product detail that was really great. I think investors' questions probably are in terms of how that product innovation works through the conversion funnel as we move through 17 and into 18. So maybe just a color of product innovation and how it plays out in the marketplace. I think any color you could give there would be really helpful. And then Gary, nuanced question, but the share count was a little bit higher than we thought in Q1. Just want to understand if there was anything one time in nature in terms of the share count for the company. Thanks, guys.
Okay. On the product change, I think there tend to be, although not always, sort of a bucket of product work that drives conversion and a separate bucket of product work that drives usage, marketing, users. They're not always different, but they're usually different. And clearly, as we develop product in the non-conversion bucket. We are very mindful not to trip up conversion buckets. When you look at something like missed connections, which actually drives increased communication, and a product like Match, increased communication drives increased conversion, they're sort of very aligned. Super like at Tinder was an example of something that was both. But on a business like POP, for instance, where it's free to communicate, driving up conversations doesn't necessarily impact conversion one way or the other. It just drives additional usage. So I think the way to think about it is there is always conversion work being done in the background that you don't necessarily see or hear about. You'll hear about it from us, but you don't hear about it sort of out there. And then there's that consumer-facing stuff that is the stuff where a user uses the product one day and then uses the product the next day and is like, wow, that's different. And that's sort of what I was outlining today. As I said, our focus has not been there over the last 3 years, as we've really been focused on trying to create functional mobile products that drive monetization the way we need to. And now we're really focused on that sort of excitement factor, the differentiation factor. And we don't expect it to negatively impact conversion. In fact, we expect that in totality, we will be driving conversion up through the year, even as we drive those initiatives.
And Eric, on the share count, if you're focused on shares outstanding related to the adjusted EPS calculation, which shows about a 20 million share increase quarter over quarter, that's really related to the adoption of ASU 2016-09, which basically adjusts the treatment of the excess tax benefit. You can no longer assume that the shares are bought back. So a little bit more than half of the change in that share increase is related to the adoption of that, with the remainder of it related to new option grants and things like that that occurred in the first quarter. So it's the accounting change that is really driving that number of shares higher. The total is about 20 million, and again, about a little bit more than half is probably related to the accounting change.
Perfect. Thank you.
Our next question will come from John Blackledge of Cowen. Please go ahead.
Great. Thanks. A couple questions. What are total affinity subs now, and how much more runoff in 2Q and 3Q? Second topic would be Match.com US. You guys said is tracking on plan. Just wondering what that means from a PMC perspective. Were Match.com US PMCs up, down, flat in 1Q, and how does that trend through the rest of the year? And then last kind of topic, Tinder, a la carte. Can you give us a sense of the split between a la carte and sub revenue for Tinder? And maybe just, you know, advertising is kind of small for Tinder right now. If you can just give a sense of like long-term mix of Tinder sub revenue versus a la carte versus advertising. Sorry for all the questions, but thank you.
Yeah, wow, that was a lot. You're testing my stenography skills, which I'm sure I will fail at. On the affinity side, again, we don't give the individual sub numbers for any of our businesses but Tinder. I think the runoff, that number is going to be somewhat sustained, about that proportion on a quarter-over-quarter basis for a couple quarters. I think it's a meaningful portion of the affinity subs, but certainly a lot less than half. We've got a stable core of very profitable subscribers there that we're going to retain and then build. In terms of Match PMC year over year, again, we don't give the number, but it is down slightly as we start to ramp up the marketing and the product initiative. Again, we've said that by the back half of the year, in the back half of the year, Match and OkCupid will sort of cross over back to year over year sub growth, and we still expect that to be the case. In terms of Tinder a la carte, again, the most we can say is that the bulk of that is from subscribers, and that is built into ARPU. But because we toggle, we've talked about this a lot at our other businesses, and the same holds true for Match. We think about pricing on a dynamic basis. You sort of establish a subscription fee. You build off that. Then over time, you start to discount to certain cohorts to drive additional subs. Simultaneously, you offset that by offering add-on and a la carte features to those subs who are willing to pay more. That's how we've been maintaining ARPU at Tinder, even as international mix has grown. So we toggle between those tactics all the time, and I think thinking about them as separate and thinking about them as sort of what percentage, I think, isn't really the right way to think about it or model. It's not really the way we do it. We think about it mostly as an ARPU driver with some additional revenue opportunities outside the sub base. Did I get all of them, or did I miss any?
The ads question.
Oh, I don't remember what the ads question was.
I think just trying to get a sense of the direction on ad revenue. And I think what we've said is, you know, again, ad revenue growth overall for the year will be somewhat faster than our overall revenue growth. It's going to be relatively flattish in the beginning part of the year, so we'll ramp as some of the Tinder initiatives take hold in the back half of the year to get us
But also, again, I've also said, you know, driving the ad revenue as fast as we can is not our priority right now. It is hard to believe, but we still struggle over engineering resources, fighting for where they go every day, no matter how many people we're adding. We don't have enough people to do all the things we want to do. So it's a struggle, and just the reality is that the ad business is not the leading priority there as we continue to drive out really cool consumer-facing features and focusing on our direct revenue basis. So I think that you were testing the Facebook piece. I think Gary's right. Our current plan is for it to grow slightly better than direct revenue, but it's not a focus. It's not as much of a focus as the other, and, you know, I think we're learning a lot about it, and you know, we expect that to be the case. But I think we're not pushing as hard on the pedal as we could, and don't expect to this year.
Okay, thank you so much.
Our next question will come from Heath Terry of Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Great. Just a couple of quick questions on the Affinity Network customers that you're seeing churn off. Are you able to migrate them over to one of the other platforms, you know, even if it's one of the freemium platforms, in a way that keeps them in the ecosystem? Or do you have a sense of what they're, you know, what they're doing once they, you know, once they leave the platform? Are they going to a competitor? Are they just giving up all together? And then on Tinder, you know, as you look to grow internationally and have gotten further into monetization with some of the efforts here in the U.S., any change in your view of what you see the sort of steady state paid member penetration as a percentage of MAU or as a percentage of the total base being over time?
Sure, Heath, thanks. On the first question, I sadly say that we are still not doing nearly as much as we could and should be doing in terms of managing users across the portfolio. We do some, mostly between Match and our Affinity brands. We have not really begun to tap into the opportunities with our soft paywall businesses and our hard paywall businesses. It is a question of resources. There is lots of opportunity there to move people both ways, which we really have not begun to do. So unfortunately, the answer is we have not meaningfully, I mean, again, there is some movement right now between Match and our Affinity businesses, but we have not developed any special strategy for doing that here. I think a way to think about it, and therefore we're not sure where they're going, I think a way to think about it is these are generally people who are harder to attract, who we've had to pay more to attract. They are therefore somewhat less valuable consumers. I'm sure that some of them are leaving, coming back and using our product. Maybe there are some using other products, although again, our Affinity users, you know, a lot of the Affinity users, especially the harder to acquire Affinity users, tend to be not as robust users of products. So I think there's probably some leakage from the system there that was driven by our overspending to acquire them. In terms of the Tinder penetration, look, Tinder penetration continues to go up. It's driven by new features, new markets, et cetera. We don't sort of publicize our penetration rates, and you know, in our long term, we expect that penetration rate to continue to grow for certainly for the foreseeable future. And again, we've monetized, as I said, we expected to be able to drive a meaningful business on top of this great product. It has gone even better than we expected, and we expect that growth to continue, you know, at least for the foreseeable future.
Great. Thank you.
Our next question will come from Brandon Ross of BTIG. Please go ahead.
Morning. Thanks for taking the questions, guys. First, thinking more about ARPU trends, can you help us size where you're at in the Tinder submix between North America, international, ex rest of world, and then rest of world, and where you think that goes over time? And then what's your best guess as to when you see core returning to year-over-year subgrowth at this point? Is that still a back half of 2017 event? And then just one more. You authorized a modest buyback and talked to future capital returns in the prepared remarks. How tied is your capital return program to IAC ownership? Thank you.
Okay, let me try and I'll take the last one first, which is it's not, you know, our buyback program and our capital return. I mean, IAC is obviously a significant shareholder, has representatives on the board, but you know, Match gets managed for Match and its shareholders. IAC has certain rights. I think it has a preemptive right that it could exercise if it wanted to. It has not done that, but our capital deployment is driven by our own corporate governance structure. In terms of Tinder submix, again, we don't give out the specifics, but I will say that if you take North America and Western Europe together, which behave pretty similarly, they make up obviously the majority. I would say probably around, you know, you can think about it maybe as three quarters, one quarter, roughly, but rest of world is growing faster than the rest. And so over time, we expect, you know, that there's growth everywhere, but over time, we expect rest of world to expand as a percentage. In terms of, you know, holding affinity aside in terms of the sort of North American core, yes, I think, you know, by the end of the year, we do expect that to become positive again. Affinity is going to, you know, obviously level set it. But we are still on track. We're still on track, affinity aside.
Thanks very much, guys.
Our next question will come from Doug Inman of J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking the question. Two things. First, Greg, just wanted to ask on Tinder and just how you're thinking about kind of the learning so far on experimenting with products inside and then outside of the hard, you know, the PMC paywall, super likes you had originally kind of inside for PMCs and then moved out. And then when you talk about the significant monetization features in 3Q, should we assume that that's really just for PMCs? And then secondly, if you could just comment a little bit more on the timing and kind of the trend that you saw in 1Q, the weaker January, February, and into the better March, the degree to which that's continuing into 2Q and how to kind of think about that relative to your comments on a seasonally slower quarter as well. Thanks.
Sure. In terms of, if I understood your first question, our philosophy on our soft paywall businesses is generally that we offer features behind the paywall that we couldn't really offer to everybody. Meaning if we have a feature that is going to make everybody's experience better, we'll give it to everybody. But there are some features that if you gave to everybody would hurt the ecosystem, but which you can give to a small number of people. For instance, Boost is an example. Boost is a feature where it allows you to sort of move yourself ahead in other people's rec engines or rec streams. By definition, you couldn't give that to everybody because it's a relative comparative advantage, so you charge for it. Same thing with Superlike. The whole point is to create scarcity, and then you allow some group of people to buy beyond that scarcity. So that's the way we sort of think about features that are paid and think about features that are unpaid. In terms of the new monetization feature we're rolling out, we're actually, as I said, we're somewhat agnostic behind between exactly how we make money in this area. And I think that this feature in particular may be something of a hybrid the way some of our other features have been. We're actually experimenting with a number of different ways to do that. We're confident in its ability to drive monetization meaningfully. Certainly PMC will be a part of that. It may or may not be the only part of that. Was there another question?
Yeah, about the weaker January, February.
It was just weird. I mean, I don't know. I've been doing this for a long time. Sort of in November, things sort of just became a little muted. It stayed muted in December. It stayed muted in January. I think we talked February 1st, and I think we said it was sort of a weird start to the year. Continued into February, absolutely turned in March, has continued in April. It's sort of things are back to the world that we know better. I have no expertise or ability to tell you exactly what was going on. Other than it was a little weird. The best thing we could point to was that it was sort of the post-election was weird and there was a lot of weirdness, but we're not pundits. I don't really know exactly what happened. But it was not brand specific. It was sort of across the board. So that's really all we know.
And within that weirdness, was it both engagement and conversion, or more of the latter?
No, it wasn't really conversion. It was more, once conversion is really driven by once you get the people in the door, conversion is product related. It was just sort of slowness on traffic really across the board, both in our marketing and non-marketing businesses. So everything was just a little slow. That's all.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Our next question will come from Mark Kelly of Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking the question. And I will I'll apologize in advance. I've been bouncing between calls, so if you address this stuff, sorry. First one is just on the Facebook inventory. I know it's super, super early. I know it's pushed out a little bit, but any indication of what you might expect in terms of ad or CPMs would be helpful. And then in terms of Tinder mobile web, what kind of adoption are you expecting relative to app usage? Is there anything that you learned from Match that can maybe help us think about how that progresses? Thank you.
On the ad side, I think we're not going to get into CPMs here, but the big toggle for us is going to be ad load at Tinder. And I think we're experimenting, as I said. I think we're going to be conservative this year. We've not built in terribly aggressive ad loads. What we care most about at Tinder is our user experience. And certainly at the ad levels that we've been driving through our direct business, there's zero impact. The Facebook deal allows us to, frankly, do whatever ad load we want, and there's sort of unlimited inventory. So now the constraint is going to be our own view of user experience. We're going to test that over time. I think we're doing some initial testing now, and then we'll sort of set a bar and roll it out more broadly, probably in end of Q2, beginning of Q3. We're going to be somewhat conservative there, which is built into our numbers for this year. I'm losing my short-term memory. What was the other question?
Tinder mobile.
Yeah, no problem.
Oh, sorry. On the online piece, it's actually the hardest thing to predict that we've done. We think it's really cool. We think it's an opportunity to hopefully increase margin some and also sort of create a somewhat different experience. The desktop piece is, the mobile web piece is relatively similar to the native app. The desktop experience is just really cool and different and sort of lends a different use case. But we don't really know. I think any comparisons to Match will just fall short. I mean, Match, the mobile web is the biggest part of the mobile experience. We don't think that will ever happen here. But it was enough that we know that we can drive mobile web usage, especially in sort of lower bandwidth markets where the native apps are harder. So we don't know. We think collectively, as I said, between the SMS auth and the web product, we are seeing in early tests some nice bumps in usership. But it's probably too early to quantify. It's certainly not built into our numbers. We'll be a little slow in rolling it out because they are big changes to the ecosystem, but we think there's some positive upside there. And you know, they're big projects, and it's nice to see them have a little payback.
Got it. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Our next question will come from Lloyd Walmsley of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Two, if I can. First, just following up on the Tinder mobile web question, just curious what kind of user behavior you're seeing there. Is that more of a kind of reduce friction around a trial and then migrate someone into an app? Or do you think someone will, you know, use the web version on mobile permanently? And, you know, do you think these users have the same capacity to convert to paying members? And then second question, last quarter you guys talked about some trials of influencer marketing in emerging markets that sounded like kind of inexpensive but promising tactics. Wondering if you can just give us an update on that.
Sure. On the mobile website, you know, again, it's early, and I think most of our testing has been done in markets that, you know, that it's not in the U.S. It's not in some of our bigger, more established markets. I think that internationally, I think there are areas with smartphones, with smartphone challenges, with bandwidth challenges. There is some reluctance to download dating apps onto your deck, which we think is an online usage use case. There is desktop. So we think it's going to be a mix of incremental users and joint usage, but it's early and we just can't really lay out exactly how that's going to play out yet. In terms of the conversion, again, we're rolling out payments in Q3. You know, unlike all our other businesses that are set up for credit card payments, et cetera, you know, Tinder has done everything through the App Store, and building that up at scale is not a small task. You have to prevent fraud, and there's all sorts of stuff. So that's going to roll out in Q3. We think conversion, we would naturally expect conversion on a similar user, meaning on the same user, we would expect conversion to be lower. That's what we've seen in our other businesses. But the question for us is it 30% lower? If it's not 30% lower, then we make money by shifting from the App Store to mobile web. And we think there will be opportunities to do that. Exactly how much and how material it will be, we're not predicting right now. It's certainly worth the effort. We're building it, and we're going to see over time.
Okay, we'll try to squeeze in one final question if we have time here.
Okay, our next question, thank you, will come from Matt Schindler of Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi, quickly. Gary, you mentioned that you would see float increase over the year even as you authorize a $6 million buyback. Wondering where this where these shares are likely to come from. And also, has there been any update or any more talk from IAC with their plans on the Match shares?
On the second question, the answer is, you know, it's not something we deal with. IAC, I know, had an investor call yesterday. I think it's got an investor call tomorrow. They're the shareholder. They make those decisions. So those questions should be directed to them. In terms of share count, look, we've got a lot of diluted securities. I think, you know, we've been public now we'll be going on 2 years. We expect there to be exercises over time. There could be M&A activity. So it's not, we're not saying we're going out and doing some big secondary offering in 2 months, but just naturally we expect float to continue to increase. And, you know, we don't expect our buybacks activity to be greater than that natural increase in float. Listen, thanks everybody for joining us. We had a good quarter. We're excited about the rest of the year, and we look forward to speaking to you guys next quarter.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, everyone, for attending today's presentation. The conference is now concluded. You may disconnect your lines.